There's a horror story that I haven't told my family, my brother and sister. I haven't told them just because it's so horrible.
This is WGCT's What It's Like, where people share just that. I'm Lindsay Kilbride, and this story starts in Jacksonville, Florida, in one of StoryCorps' recording booths. StoryCorps is a nonprofit that records conversations between people all around the country. People like 50-year-old Luna Kuwit and his sister, 40-year-old Kompek Kuwit.
Even when I was going through school, what happened in Cambodia wasn't really discussed very thoroughly. I think maybe we might have glossed over it a little bit in world history. But it's a huge part of our history. I don't think that I would want my kids to grow up and not know about what their granddad did, about what their grandmother did, you know, about what we all had to go through to get here, because it's a part of our life, it's a part of our culture, and it makes us who we are, really.
Kompek and Luna lived through the regime of the Khmer Rouge. And a warning, some of the things they lived through might be disturbing to some listeners. When we talked after the StoryCorps conversation, they both said they never shared much about those things with their friends at school growing up in the U.S. But for Luna, at least, they never left his mind.
In my nightmare, I've always had this huge cloud, dark, huge cloud that hangs over within touching distance over my head. It's a cloud, but you know, it seems like I can touch it, but the cloud feels like it's a huge stone that was floating over me. And it's just like a threatening thing.
Luna's nightmares started when he was a little kid, after he separated from his parents in Cambodia and forced to live in a work camp. In 1975, the country is being controlled by the communist Khmer Rouge. And suddenly, Luna's days of fishing with his brothers and seeing movies in the city are over. Luna was five.
That day that everything changed for me, my grandparents, my aunt and uncle, were celebrating at a Buddhist temple. Myself, my mother, and my two sisters, we were left at home and we were going to go to the temple shortly after them. But a group of soldiers, these are kid soldiers, came through our fence and then started shooting. They were just shooting their guns up in the air, demanding that we leave the house immediately, you know, take only what we can carry. My mother gathered what she could carry, and then we left the house. They just said, you know, go this way, go that way. And they just point a gun and we just follow, you know, left the city. That day, we were separated. All my family on my mother's side are all gone. Yeah, that's the day that changed my life forever.
The Khmer Rouge forced people living in cities to work on communal farms and camps in the countryside. Somewhere around 2 million people, some estimate more, would die from starvation, disease, and torture and execution. Anyone who was educated was killed, including Luna's grandparents, aunt, and uncle. And none of his living family members know what happened to one of Luna's brothers, who was just taken away that day by soldiers and never seen again. Luna lived in a camp with other children for 4 years.
We got up early in the morning. They marched us into the jungle, and then we would find firewood, and then we would cut down small trees and brushes, kind of clearing. But I'm not sure what we were doing, why we were clearing places. They told us we were making fertilizer from tree clippings and whatnot, and we were collecting firewood for the camp. Every night before we go to bed, the camp leader would have like a meeting, and then they would recite certain doctrine, I guess. We sing praises to the Khmer Rouge leader. And we were, you know, they were always enforcing rules. And if you broke the rule that day, they would tell you that this person did this, what would the group want them to do? And so they asked the group to give out or dose out a punishment. I guess in a way that's probably a way of brainwashing, but I didn't know it at the time.
At 5, Luna's the oldest. His younger siblings would get to stay with his mom, and his sister Compaq is born in a camp. So she went into the StoryCorps booth with Luna, asking for more details.
I mean, I've always heard Dad's side of the, you know, the story about when we lost our brother. How did that impact you? I mean, you were young. You were young.
Yeah. Well, we lost two brothers. Yes. One that died and one that was just lost. But the one brother that you're talking about or referring to was my younger brother. He was the youngest. If everybody would have survived, we would have had 7 in total. So he lived through the Khmer Rouge, and he died right at the end when the Vietnamese liberated Cambodia and we were free of the Khmer Rouge. He was so thin. He lost so much weight. Literally, he was just bones. And when we left the camp and came back to the city, I had carried you on one side of the basket, and I carried him on the other side of the basket because he was so light, and you were just a baby. And you weighed more than he did. He couldn't eat. He couldn't drink. I remember he said he was so thirsty. And so the first night that we camped after the day of the liberation, it rained so hard. And I remember him just licking the rain and trying to get water. But he had to spit it out because he couldn't drink it. And when the rain stopped, he died. He died in my arm. And then I think that same day, Dad came and found us. And the army said, "You have to move, you have to move, because they're coming." And They're moving on us. It was the other side of the military. They were gaining ground on us. We went into this banana garden, and Dad and I dug a small grave site, and we wrapped him in some cloth, and we buried him. It was a very shallow ground. I'm sure the rain probably washed him away after we left that day.
I was too young to know him. And I don't know if that's my saving grace or if it's a horrible thing.
Take me through that struggle, that back and forth.
Yeah, it is something that I think about quite often. I mean, two people, two brothers, and they loved me. I was the baby. My parents would tell me that they gave things up for me. They adored me. How do you reconcile that? Zero memories of either of them. I've written letters that don't go anywhere. Apologizing.
What would you be apologizing for?
They didn't make it.
I do remember when we got off the airplane in Washington, And I was standing next to a lady who happened to didn't have any shoes on. And she was leaning again, what I now know as an escalator. And I told my mom, I said, "Mom, she has duck feet." And what it was she had, she was wearing a pantyhose and I didn't see her toes. And I thought that all her toes are fused together like ducks, so that's why I said duck feet.
For his sister, Compek, all of her early memories are of life in the U.S., living with a sponsor family in Illinois, everyone learning English, her dad riding a 10-speed bicycle through the snow to two jobs. She learned about the camps and the jungle and her lost brothers from her dad's stories around the dinner table, but she doesn't really remember Luna having a seat at the table for those stories.
Every time I would speak in earnest or talk or have a conversation with my sibling, it sort of kind of tear me up a little bit, if that's the word for it. It's hard to bring it back to the surface.
Are there stories to this day that you haven't told anybody?
There's a horror story that I haven't told my family. My brother and sister, I haven't told them just because it is so horrible. They were torturing other people, and I was a witness to it. And I'd wake up having this dream, and it's like I was still there.
Growing up, Compek thought of her brother as hardened and disciplined, a star swimmer, but not a hugger.
I don't remember him smiling very much, either. I remember being scared of him a lot, like, I don't want to get him mad at me.
On top of everything, their mom died when Luna was a teenager, so he had to step up and basically be a parent. But Compek says he changed suddenly on a family trip back to Cambodia in 2003.
Do you remember when we were walking outside of the hotel, that very, very fancy $8 a night hotel? And you saw the woman with the little baby?
Yes, I remember that.
And I don't know where those tears came from, because I had never seen not one of them fall out of your eyes. And right then I was like, something's different with my brother. He's different.
The lady at that market had a sick little boy, very sick, and he was bright red and so skinny. And she sat there by herself, holding him in a sling. And I remember her begging for money. And as she was telling the story, I asked her where she came from. And I remember she was telling me the name of the village where she came from. And it was the village where they sent us. That's where you were born. And she said she needed some medicine for him to get well. But I had this picture in my mind of Mom holding my little brother. And I think I only had a few dollars, maybe $10, $15, in the pouch that I'd carry around that day. And whatever I had in that pouch, I gave it to her. And I told her, you need to get back to your family. And she thanked us profusely. And that was the end of it.
I think at that point, I knew that there was more to you as a person than I ever knew before. It was like, I want to get to know you as a person, not just as my big brother.
For Luna, the trip was a release. Afterward, his nightmares stopped. But he realizes Compek is now dealing with some emptiness, some questions she didn't know she had before the trip, or even the recent StoryCorps conversation.
I realized I judged my brother. I judged him for being hard.
And I didn't like him for it. For a lot of years, I didn't like him. I just thought he was mean. But he wasn't. He was just scared.
This is What It's Like, a production made possible by the supporters of WGCT. This episode was based on a conversation recorded by StoryCorps in Jacksonville, Florida. It was produced by me, Lindsay Kilbride, with editing by Jessica Palumbo. And some of the music you heard was composed by our intern, Al Pete. This is the final episode of the season, but stay subscribed to make sure you're the first to hear about the next podcast from WGCT.